recorded live from Orlando, Florida and Nashville, Tennessee, you're listening to The Dapper Danielle Show, starring Ian Wilson, Clarence Kelly, and now, here's your host, the one and only, The Dapper Danielle.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dapper Danielle Show. Thank you so much for being here today. I am joined by the ever so fabulous Clarence Kelly and Ian Wilson, my co-host from, we got to come up with something else because you guys are over in the middle of Nashville, Tennessee. So like, what's a good like tagline into that?
I think
it's so funny that we're finally waiting until episode like what, 5 for me to figure this out. I need a good transition for that.
Yeah, it's not like you can just say we're the co-hosts from another coast because we're on the same coast. Exactly. We're not even on a coast.
You're in the middle. You're in the middle of the United States.
Getting by on Central Time.
Oh, there you go. I like that. That's a pokey lethargy.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll put a pin in that. If anybody has any good ideas, please leave a note over in the episode notes for us, or even just send us a DM over at podcast@thedapperdanielle.com and let us know what you think. But we actually have a really great show for y'all today. We are going to dive into one of my passions. And believe it or not, it's about Disney Springs, something that's been a part of my Disney career for a very, very long time. Something I'm still passionate about because there are some great history, some great like Imagineering details that I think people just forget about because they're like, oh, it's just shopping. I'm like, no, there's more to it. And we want to talk on those and kind of reminisce on some history because Ian, Clarence and I, we have seen Disney Springs, Downtown Disney in Walt Disney World go through a lot of changes. Yes. And we want to talk about those a little bit. We also have some news to cover. But the news I was breaking before we started recording was I got new Labobos. Okay. I don't know if you guys know about these. Clarence, we got Shelby, your girlfriend, one of these. But Ian, you don't have any Labobos for Jacqueline or Georgiana yet, right?
No Labobos at this time.
I think
he's Labu broke.
I don't know what fascinates me about these. Like okay, this is now my third Labubu, right? So I bought one that I just happened to grab on Pop Mart. I was able to grab the one for you, and then I was gifted one, and then this one was gifted to me also by a small business. Big League Cards here in Orlando area. And I was just like, so it's a legit one. It's not a LaFoo-foo. I had, when Clarence was down here in Orlando, I was educating him on what a LaFoo-foo was. Ian, do you know what a LaFoo-foo is?
No, but I'm instantly thinking that Disney needs to make a little tiny LaFoo from Beauty and the Beast that attaches to your backpack, and it is a LaFoo-foo. That would be amazing.
That's brilliant.
I mean, actually that's amazing brilliant. If they made that, but I don't think they will. But
I mean, if you just change the hair and you put like a little trousers and a top on him and a vest, this could be LaFoo.
That is LaFoo-foo.
I like that. That's really funny.
I'm gonna get a LaFoo-foo and then turn it into a LaFoo-foo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, this is brilliant idea, Ian. I'm going to use that. Oh my gosh. Okay. Putting a pin in that. But then I was also showing you guys that there's a Disney version of them. And so I got Chip here recently. He looks a little funny. I don't know if I love the ears.
He does
I
kind of want little...
him. Now, okay. Now,
kind of Teletubby-esque in a way.
Mm-hmm. What's funny is that they do have Teletubby versions now.
Oh no.
They're getting all the IPs, but this one's also made by Pop Mart, and it's like the Mickey Mouse and Friends one. And I like the Chip and Dale and the Donald and Daisy the most. I do not like the Mickey and Minnie in this set at all. I think it's something about the vinyl faces that they look creepier than this, you know? And I don't know. Goodness. I'm now a 30 something year old adult, and I'm addicted to blind box toys now, which is unfortunate. Luckily, most of these I am not paying for with my own money. It's all collaborations or they're gifted to me. So thank goodness. But I don't know the people that are paying for them.
It's all right. Me and Shelby were at Target last night, and I was looking at Sonic the Hedgehog tech decks.
Like, were you really?
I was. There were a bunch of them there, and she's like, "Do you want one?" I'm like, "No, I don't need one. I'm a 30-year-old man. I don't need one. We did buy slime, though.
Nice. I don't know. Is that better? Is that like?
I don't know. It was $5, and Shelby said she wanted to try. She had seen a bunch of slime videos and wanted to try it, so we bought some slime and was playing with it when we got home last night.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, but
Are you having any other toy things that you're just like, okay, slime, tech decks, laboo-boos? I have a child.
You're talking to Ian.
Yeah, I don't, yeah, I don't have any right now. I mean, yeah, you guys are living your best Freakier Friday life of bringing back the early 2000s here. But for me right now, I am acquiring actual baby toys, not small children toys from retro themed kind of ones.
Honestly, what would be hilarious though, this could be a great Halloween costume idea, Ian, for baby one. Dress her up as a laboo-boo.
I was
turn her
that.
Into a laboo-boo.
There's a what's it called, like the pumpkin festival here, whatever the fall festival is in Franklin. There's a costume contest and there's a group costume contest as well. And I have been thinking about like, what could we go as that would be, you know, perfect to incorporate the baby as. I thought about the laboo-boo. That would be kind of cool, but that kind of doesn't leave like me and Jacqueline with like. We're just like regular people then with like,
no, but you can make it a whole prop thing. So like before you get on stage, you put her in a laboo-boo box and then you're unboxing the laboo-boo and then it's her in whatever color, or decorate her as like a secret rare. And then she's like, that'd be adorable. You guys would win immediately.
Everyone in Franklin, isn't that baby a little small to be putting in a box? Can they breathe? It's kind of concerning.
Well, no, it would just be the facade of a box.
For the Harvest Festival.
No, it would be a faux front, and then you just like pull her out, you know?
That could be good.
Anyway.
Really funny.
We'll think about it.
Yeah, I went to a coffee shop here in town too called Babu recently.
Yeah.
And the whole time I was there, I kept wanting to call it Lababu. And I was just like, do you think that I asked Shelby when we were there, I'm like, do you think they'd get mad if I asked for a Lababu La Latte? Like,
and I wonder if someone else has also thought that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was gonna say. They're probably like, yep, heard that. Got anything else you need to get out of your system? What do you want? You want a coffee? Hot coffee? Cold coffee? Just order your coffee and move on, dude. Let's go. Come on.
Speaking of moving on, let's move on let's move on from laboo-boos.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we do have some breaking news going on here in the world of themed entertainment. A lot of it actually happened here at Disney World, and some of it could have been an email. For those that are not aware, D23, Destination D23 just happened here in Walt Disney World. And let's just say some people are very disappointed with the announcements that did end up happening, because most of them were announced at a media event literally the weekend before. So this was they were like, oh, we'll do a whole panel on Saturday for the villains themed information. And everybody was so hopeful that we were going to get some information about Villains Land, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they didn't get any information on Villains Land. They got a glorified Pinterest board showcasing what the inspiration is. And most of it is just screenshots from different villains and some very rough, vague sketches. And an introduction of the Bath and Body Works Villains line that everybody already knew about because every other influencer got a PR package about it.
Oh my gosh.
So everybody was like so disappointed in it. And there was some good news that did come out of D23 that some people are very excited about. And one of them is that the Cinderella's Castle here at Magic Kingdom in Walt Disney World is being repainted to its original classic white, gray, and blue color scheme instead of what was painted to for the 50th anniversary, which was like a blue, pinkish kind of color. We were very matchy-matchy with Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
What are our thoughts?
Personally, I love it. I feel like I like classic. So I felt like the announcement was very good. I don't know. I mean, maybe you guys... I don't know if you guys think that the art is potentially AI or if it's real art, but either way, I thought very pretty. It's like, I was like, wow, this is just like this, you know, if it makes you feel like, okay, Cinderella's Castle is more than just being a part of Disney World with all these people going there and stuff. It's like, okay, yeah, I'm kind of transported into the world of Cinderella just with the concept art. So I really liked the concept art. It really made me connect and be like, yep, I love it. Let's go for it, just because it looks so good, so classy, so timeless. I don't know if I'm really going to miss the kind of dusty rose hue on part of the castle. I like kind of just the clean white, very classic look. So I'm excited for it. I do think it's kind of interesting to just think about all the different, you know, variations that Cinderella's castle has gone through through the years. Even like, I don't know. I mean, I didn't see this in person, but I know when they were doing some of the announcements for at D23, they did like the whole Stitch thing with toilet paper. And didn't they like toilet paper the castle at some point with like Stitch or something? So it's just funny how it's like the castle kind of is like this. It gets a makeover every now and then for the big parties, the big celebrations and stuff. So it's fun to kind of see those temporary things come in. But I like also knowing that like we can go back to the classic and just be like, yeah, let's, you know, love it for what it is too when the celebration's over.
Oh, yeah.
I imagine too that if in a practical sense, it's easier to project onto a white and gray background than a pink one.
That's probably true.
As they incorporate more projections into their nighttime show. Mm-hmm. I think that like makes sense. I like that it's OG. Anything to differentiate us from Disneyland. Beyond that, like make it purple. I don't know. I don't have strong feelings one way or the other. I do think like, if you're going to call it Cinderella's Castle, make it look like Cinderella's Castle from the original film, which it's going back to. So I'm here for it. I like it. I think it's, when I read it, I was kind of like, okay, cool.
Well, it's so funny. I have seen such a mix of emotions of people that heard the news and literally started like crying because the original version of the castle was, they had such a sentimentality to and were so attached to. So the fact that their castle is coming back is what they're excited about. But then there's also this new generation of people are just now coming to Disney World for the first time post 2020. And this version of the castle, the pink and the blue, is all that they know. They don't remember or have memories of the stark white and the like, I don't even know how to describe it, but like the OG version of the castle. They have no memory or recollection of that. And I think that will be an interesting shift. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how people react to it. Something else that they noted in the Disney Parks blog post is that whatever paint that they're using is supposed to be UV resistant. So it's supposed to stay pristine looking for a much longer time.
Okay.
Which I think is interesting, but also the UV resistant still only lasts for like 5+ years or so, especially in the Florida sun. And they're going to have to repaint it again anyway. And I think that's really why they're repainting it now, is because it's been 5 years since it got painted the first time. It's time for a fresh coat of paint. And they're like, okay, do we pay for the pink again? Or this UV white's on sale. Do we just go back to the white? I actually kind of think that's more of what it was.
That's interesting. How much time is this going to take though? Like, I don't even remember when they were doing it for pink one. Like, is it like, okay, we've got the little cherry pickers up around the castle for like a week, 2 weeks, like a month?
A lot of it was done originally during shutdown.
Oh, okay. So that is, but so we, I'm just trying to imagine, like, I feel like if they have to have like, you know, anything out there, I mean, I feel like, I don't know. I mean, Disney can probably do whatever they want, but I feel like painting at night is not something I would attempt, but I'm sure Disney has got lights and they can illuminate it and just paint at night or something. But it seems like there's going to be a lot of family pictures that are going to be very unmagical for a certain period of time when it's like, okay, we're redoing the paint and we have all these construction materials around and stuff. So I'm just kind of curious to know like how quick it's going to be like, you know, transformed.
Well, I don't believe it's going to start until after the holiday season. Because they already have projections and stuff set up for the holiday shows. They're not going to mess around with that until after January. So that way they can have cherry pickers up there. There's no major holiday events going on. And what's funny is that that's kind of the main reason why the holiday lights, the icicle lights on the castle, why they did not return was because the cherry picker and the giant cranes had to be up for so long that people didn't love it in the month of October and November because it was in the background of all their photos.
Yeah.
But then they complain that the dream lights aren't back. And I'm like, you either get one or the other. You can't have best of both worlds. So that's why they did not come back. It's just easier to project onto the castle.
That's fair.
All right. Now, Clarence, you were telling us this information. This is some other stuff that's happening outside the Disney bubble, but still within the themed entertainment world. And something about Howard Stern and the Stephen Colbert show. What are you reading?
Well, so I saw an article recently that was speculating whether or not Howard Stern was going to be canceled on SiriusXM. Like if his show was going to be canceled. Because I think right now he had a $5 million 5-year contract with SiriusXM, and it's coming to an end, or maybe has come to an end by the time.
Or is it coming up for renewal?
Well, that's the question. It's like, are they going to renew it? Is he like, what's happening with Howard Stern? And I think it got me thinking more about like where, like these titans of old media kind of sit in today's zeitgeist, especially with how TikTok has become a major influencer like platform, and same with YouTube and like podcasting and things like that. Because I saw that the CEO of SiriusXM says that Howard Stern is like the best interviewer of all time, and I really don't think of him that way. I don't think Howard Stern is a very good interviewer. The few things I've heard him like interview, like his radio show, I've heard it a few times, and I really don't find him that impressive or interesting. And I was like really thinking, like, is that just because I'm younger and I didn't grow up with Howard Stern listening to him, or is that like just because like there are new people that do it better now? So I'm kind of curious what y'all's thought is. And I think too, with the Colbert show being canceled and like being taken off of what is it, NBC?
I don't watch normal television, so yeah. I can't even
see. That's the thing.
Good like, testament, right there to your.
I don't
right
watch
there.
It either. I don't like. I anything I see of late night shows is on YouTube at this point. Right. So I'm like, I'm just curious because, like, I look at like someone like Conan O'Brien, who I actually really like. Conan O'Brien.
Do you really?
Yeah, I'm a big Conan fan. I think he's really funny. But he has like fully transitioned to podcasting once his late night show was done. Right. And from what I see, he's doing very well at that. And like, because I think the show is called Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, which is a pretty funny title in itself. But it's just an interview show. He interviews people, he has them on a show. And then he has like sort of like what we do. He like Danielle, you're the main person. He's the main person on his. And then he has his like co-hosts that are just kind of there as well to bounce stuff off of. So I'm curious what y'all's thoughts are. That was a long-winded introduction into what I was thinking after reading this article. And I'm curious, like, where are you guys finding the majority of your media? Like, what do you think about, like, old media titans, and like, where do they sit now in our culture, in the media?
Well, I'm definitely going to have an opinion. So Ian, I want you to share your opinion first, because I kind of come from the viewpoint of being in the social media world, seeing the news happen in lifetime, especially in the theme park world, and who I trust to give me that information. So Ian, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I think it just kind of reminds me of like the like classic, I feel like if you've not read this book, 100% iconic book of all time, Amusing Ourselves to Death by Neil Postman. And I feel like just very interesting book, very, one of the concepts he talks about is the medium is the message. So the way you're communicating to people is part of the message you're actually communicating the same way. And I think when you look at where people want to get their information from nowadays, what mediums they're consuming. So social media, podcasts, these types of things. No one is consuming, you know, cable TV. No one's consuming these big time shows that have been around for forever. And so I think that's that decline in popularity for those types of mediums is naturally going to uproot some of the titans in those industries. But I think it's interesting too, because I don't think it's an issue with the, like, the personalities necessarily. Like, I think Clarence, you make a good point with, like, Conan. If, like, it's not that Conan is bad in front of people, or he is a bad interviewer, or, you know, whatever. He has natural charisma. He's got a, you know, showmanship. He's got an idea of what he wants to do as far as production. It's just that the medium that that is on is not popular, and no one under the age of probably, I'm just going to take a stab at, like, 48 is going to be looking for those mediums as for entertainment, for anything. I think about that all the time with, like, Saturday Night Live, because I feel like our parents, you know, our parents' generation all just raves about Saturday Night Live. This is so funny. We love Saturday Night Live. I feel like every time I watch Saturday Night Live, or even, you know, segments of the show now, I'm just like, I'm just not very entertained by this. And I think, so I think in the increasingly, like, digital age, what you're going to see is that the communicators of information are going to become more decentralized. You're going to have more things like this podcast, where you like someone's personality, you like what topics they're covering, you trust them, so you go to them for information, or you're going to have live entertainment experiences. I think, like, with AI and digital, like, those are still going to be really valuable because people connect with that. But it's only going to be valuable if you can be there in person. No one is really going to care about that, like, in between of a super centralized, like, Saturday Night Live, Colbert show, where it's like one show happening in one place, one person, not going super into detail, kind of high level, and only an audience of 60, 100, 200 people in person. That's not very exciting. If we can have, you know, 5,000 people in a theater experiencing a show together, people are going to keep paying money for that. If we can have 5 million listeners listening to a really specific topic that we can have industry experts going into, people are going to pay for that. But no one's going to pay for that in between, I think, as much, or no one's going to care about it. So that's my longer winded take of, it's not surprising. It wouldn't surprise me if SiriusXM is not willing to continue to shell out that kind of cash, because I just don't know if they're going to get the return on it. Because frankly, you could have an upstart, you know, new social media person that could probably take on a SiriusXM show and have just as many listeners as someone like Howard Stern in 2027. So why would I not pay that new person $200,000? I would take, if someone offered me $200,000 to do a podcast right now on SiriusXM, I'd be like,
oh yeah,
hands down, no problem. I take that. I'll work like a slave for you, because that's a lot of money. Howard Stern's going to be like, $200,000? Are you kidding me? Like, you know, so it's like, if I'm SiriusXM, who am I taking? If I get equal listeners, I'm taking the cheaper option, obviously. So I think we're going to shift more that way. That's kind of my thoughts.
Interesting. Interesting. So it's almost, I'm kind of like, in between everything of, I could see why SiriusXM would keep them, would keep Howard Stern, only for the reasoning of his age demographic and who he caters to, right?
Yeah.
So if you think about it, it's our parents who don't know how to cancel a subscription.
Yeah.
So SiriusXM is still getting the monies because the Howard Stern's name is still bringing them in. Like, you know, that so I think that's one side of it that I think might be interesting and something to look at. But then I agree with both of you of, I think a lot of it is the medium. It's how tangible it is, how easily accessible it is. How can people watch? That's why even our podcast is available on YouTube. It's available wherever you listen to your podcast at, because we want it to be accessible for everyone. Some people like the visual aspect and they like seeing me make my facial expressions and using my hand movements so much in these videos. So that's why they watch on YouTube. But different reasons. But I think for me personally, when I consume my news and my information, seeing, like, especially theme park news released in live time, I'm picking and choosing who I trust. Right. So some of it is, I don't necessarily want to listen to somebody that are they being paid for their opinion? Is it genuine? Is it true? Kind of things.
Come on, Danielle, let's say names.
I'm not dropping no names. It's not this kind of podcast, guys. We're not dropping bombs like that. But also when it comes to like regular news media, I don't necessarily feel like I trust the normal news network, because how much money and what information is being put out there because of funding and backing. So I'd rather hear from the small time news people that are always on it, that you can see proof that they are boots on the ground finding information. They are running around DC and they're running around New York City for this information, these breaking news stories. And they might be getting paid out of it, but they're working hard. You can see the hustle, and it's not, they're being backed by a toothpaste company or something like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Wish we were backed by a toothpaste company. I feel like my last thought on this before we can transition then to more, you know, another entertainment.
It's a different fun topic.
Yeah, but I do think too, another interesting thing is I think with some of these big names too, the money follows their success, and it's not that the success follows the money. And so I think in some of these cases, it's like, okay, Howard Stern, he signs a $500 million contract, his last, you know, 5-year contract. He was probably past his peak as far as viewership and where he was going as an entertainer before he signed that contract. And then because he's there, he gets the biggest contract, and then now he's kind of on the decline. So I don't know. To me, it's like, it's kind of like, you look at like NFL players, you look at all, you know, some of these just like the biggest like sports contracts, they don't get it right before they're about to launch into this like 7 years of dominance. Most of the time it's like they've already proven that they have 2, 3, 4 years of dominance at a really, really elite level. And then the big money comes in, and then, but that's kind of already past the peak. They might still have some good years, not saying it's like you get the big contractors done, but I do think sometimes it's like, you know, we as consumers look at, oh, a 5-year, $5 million contract as them paying for the future, the 5 years in the future, when in reality, is it just Howard Stern getting paid for the success he had 5 years prior? And now the future, it's, you know, it's kind of like retirement or something, where it's just basically he's being compensated for what he already has done, not for what he's going to do. So
hopeful that we are just now on the brink of success because of how broke we are, and eventually we'll get that big payout there in a couple years.
Money, so we have to be super successful.
There you go.
I just think we look at it differently. We look at those big contracts as, wow, that is a promise that for the next 10 years, the next 5 years, they are going to be as successful as they were previously, when really it's almost a, okay, we're paying you, you know, we're repaying the credit that you kind of gave us of all the viewerships, the success and stuff like that. So I don't know, just a different perspective on maybe why it's not, big contracts are not indicators of where things are going to go in the next 5 years. So anyways,
I think that's a great observation. That's a very interesting thought. For the listener, podcast at thedapperdanielle .com. What do you think about media titans and where they are going?
How close are each of us? Rank each of us as far as where we fit on the media titan.
That's not a good poll. We're not going to do that one.
And tell us how many degrees separated you are from Howard Stern. And with that, we can move on to the next
This one kind of ties into our topic of Disney Springs here in just a little bit. And did you guys know that Jock Lindsay's Hangar Bar, one of my favorite bar locations in Walt Disney World, has a Halloween overlay?
I had no idea.
This is the first year that they are doing this. So during the holiday season, during the festive Christmas time, it becomes Jock Lindsay's Holiday Bar. And it is over the top, tchotchke, 60s, 70s, maximalism Christmas. Mm. And now they've taken that same mentality and applied it to the Halloween season. And this is the first year that they've done it. And I actually have not gotten over there yet to try any of the themed drinks and menu. But they have altered their menu and their offerings to be slightly spookified. And it is really, really cute. I'm kind of loving some of these options. Are you guys seeing this, what this menu is right here?
Yeah, I checked it out a little bit before, but I also am just seeing it now, and it does. I honestly, I will have to say, if you said, just like one spot to go eat food at Disney Springs. Jock Lindsay's is always up there. I don't know why, but they know what they're doing in that kitchen. It's like always good, pretty good value, just enjoyable experience.
It's, I think what it is the, a lot of these offerings. So for those that don't know, in the world of Disney Springs, and I'm going to touch on this a little bit more here in a bit, is 83% of Disney Springs is operated by a third party. So it is not the employees, the people that are there, they're not getting a paycheck from Mickey Mouse. Jock Lindsay's is actually a Disney owned and operated location. And hence why there's so much of the Lucasfilm and like Indiana Jones theming in this bar. But this is the one area where I feel like the culinary and the chef team here can really play a little bit more when they're given a theme and they love it. And you can kind of tell based off what these are. So like there's Alien Invader sliders. Yes. With crispy Nashville hot chicken, sliced provolone, dill pickle slices, cheddar chive biscuit, and green olives. That actually sounds pretty good.
Yeah,
it does. I don't know that it fits the theme, though, of 1940 monster and Halloween.
I mean,
I'll get to why in a second.
Alien invaders.
Did you scroll down to the picture down below?
Yes, but let's think about what monster movies were there. I don't know that there were any alien monster movies until the 50s.
Yeah, that's true. But I feel like most of the decor is also that.
I guess there was 40s. War of the Worlds. War of the Worlds was like the alien book. What was it? Journey to the Moon. Which author was that? The French author.
Jules.
It looks like some of those like freaky little cartoon, like alien creatures from the late 40s, early 50s.
Yeah, I think I was looking for like considering like when Indiana Jones takes place. I think I was looking for more like 1940s, like old monster movie type theme stuff. So like Dracula and the Mummy and the Invisible Man.
Well, there is cursed mummy sausages.
Yes, there is some. And I will say, even looking at the photos of the hangar bar, it looks more like someone was decorating for Christmas and then suddenly realized, oh wait, it's October. And decided to put a bunch of Halloween stuff up because there's a bunch of garland and everything. Like, I don't think of garland for Halloween.
Yeah.
I think it's more a filler because that is such a big space. Right. And Jock Lindsay's already has so much going on in some of the decor that you almost need the garland to cover up what is normally there to be able to add stuff on top of.
Yeah, but you can add other hanging things. Like you can do like the paper cat cutouts that are hung on a string.
Right.
Like going across the top of the bar. I really like the more I look at it, the less I like it.
Really?
To be completely honest. I really don't think it looks good.
Maybe it's because we are era purists of like I think this is like some people don't realize is that when you look at certain decor from and you know what the timeline is supposed to be for either a movie or a genre and you're like, that's not accurate. And it starts to bug you more and you analyze it more and more. You're like, that's not right. So I get that. I totally do get that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just lost in the sauce researching alien movies from the 1940s.
There's probably a couple, but I think of like the big, like the classic Universal monsters.
Yeah.
Like Dracula. Know?
Yeah. Or like the Hunchback, the, Frankenstein, the Mummy, Invisible Man, Werewolf of London, you know, like,
mm.
Like, that's what I think.
Some of the food options kind of do resemble that a little bit. I think the one that has the most Instagram worthy appeal is actually the little ghosty. I think they're, what does it say there on the menu? Are they like sausages or meatballs?
Cursed mummy sausages, phantom dumplings.
Phantom dumplings.
Chicken and pork dumplings wrapped in rice paper served with teriyaki dipping sauce. I mean, the food does sound good.
So that one in particular, the phantom dumplings, are actually the rice paper is draped over top of it and they're on a stick pointing up. So they look like little ghosties. Mm-hmm. And they come out in a glass container that has mist in it, or like they smoke it up a little bit and they trap it in there. So when you release it, it has a little smoke effect come out of it. So it's very Instagram worthy. I see why they did it.
Yeah. I also like some of the names, or maybe just one of the names, feels really weird to me. The spike trap, for the mouth. It's a drink, which I get that they're trying to do like, oh, it's spiked, like alcohol is spiked. But when you call it a spike trap, the first thing I think of is a punji pit. You know,
it's like supposed to, it's from supposed the
Vietnam
be,
War.
Well, no, it's supposed to be like the spike trap in the temples of Indiana Jones.
Okay, yeah.
They have that referenced in
which is a punji pit.
Yeah, literally, yes. So, like, they have that also referenced in some of the Christmas stuff. One of the Christmas offerings was, it's a mine cart, and it had... It was on a bed of like potato strings, and then it had meatballs all over it. And all I could think was in the, oh my gosh, which Indiana Jones movie was it? Where
probably Temple of Doom.
Yeah, the mine cart would be Temple of Doom, wouldn't it be?
Probably. Temple of Doom. Yeah. And in the beginning of Temple of Doom, they're eating the monkey brains.
That's not the beginning. The beginning they're in Shanghai.
Okay, in the middle before they're trying to run away from everybody.
Yeah.
Right? So it's just funny that like these meatballs that look like little monkey brains are in the cart. And I'm like, that is great Indiana Jones theming. I thought that was really fun.
It is, but I feel like they could have picked something that, like, for the spike trap, could have been something that wasn't a punji pit. Like... There's better stuff to theme a drink out off of rather than like a medieval torture device.
I don't really understand why it's called the spike trap either, too, because the picture of it is it's like it's just a white colored drink with a ghost in it. Like there's nothing that connects it to the spike trap other than the little skewer going through the ghost, which maybe that is very on brand, or it's like you're dead because you were in the spike trap. But other than that, it's like, I don't know. Just kind of odd to me. It's like,
it could be called, I mean, even if they wanted to keep it like trap related, maybe call it like the giant boulder or like the blow dart. Cause like with the skewer going through the side of the ghost, it looks like he was hit by a blow dart.
Yeah.
I guess it could be a like a sideways spike trap. Like, okay. The more I talk about this, the more it makes sense to me. I think I just am looking for something to complain about.
You know what? I will go and investigate it. I will try the menu and I will let you know what I think. At the end of the day, if it tastes good, I think it's fine.
Ask them, why did you name it the spike trap?
Why did we name it this way? Let me ask my culinary friends over there. Give me the reasonings why. Mm-hmm. That'd be very interesting. But
the food does sound good.
It does.
I don't want to always try to be I'm trying not to be like the, try and get the last word in, you know?
No, that's okay. But, and honestly, that's the whole point of this podcast, is that I am usually the very positive one, except for when I do have very hard opinions about some things. And then you guys are just the balance. It's really what it is, you know?
We're there to even it all out. Okay, well, speaking of balance, speaking of Jock Lindsay, Danielle, moving to the main attraction, Disney Springs. Why is Jock Lindsay at Disney Springs? Why is anything at Disney Springs? we want to hear more about the history, the reasons why Disney Springs was created, maybe just a little background in general about Disney Springs, because it's the area itself has been many things to many people in many ways over the years since its creation in 1975, I think, ish, when it was like just a mall, basically. So enlighten us.
Well, and it was a little bit more than that, right? So originally it was like the Disney Village. And it was where Saratoga is. Saratoga was meant to be more of an actual like community, and it was supposed to be housing. So this was supposed to be just the shopping area adjacent to where people actually lived. And that was in the 70s. A lot of those buildings are still almost the same over there in the Marketplace side, which if you are not familiar with Disney Springs layout, it is the side where the big World of Disney store is and the between Rainforest Cafe and World of Disney, basically.
Ghirardelli's, the Rebus Brothers, the little weird train ride that only is for like children. They laugh at me every time I'm like, I want to ride it. You know, it's like...
See, but now you have Georgiana, so then the next time you go, you can have an excuse to go on it with her.
Exactly.
It'd be great. She'll be like, Dad, why are you doing this? And you're like, we're having fun. and so that part has been around for years. And then slowly but surely, it did evolve over time. We had the 80s and the 90s roll in the West Side and Pleasure Island. And Pleasure Island was introduced to compete with the nightclub scene that was happening in downtown Orlando. And that was really Eisner's push to be like, no, we want to keep these adults here on property. So what do we need to do? So Pleasure Island was born.
Such a good idea. Like just one of the most random ideas in Disney history of all time. But I love it. I'd like Disney thinking at some point, like, let's get into the nightlife scene. It's like, who pitched that at a board meeting? And they were like, yeah, that makes sense. Let's go for it. I like it. Like we were in the 80s.
It was, late 80s, early 90s, and it worked. It had put multiple businesses in downtown Orlando out of business. And Pleasure Island became the place where New Year's Eve happened every single night. There was fireworks that would launch. There was a nightly countdown that would happen, actually a couple times a night. And it was a New Year's Eve party every single night. That's also where the birth of the Adventurers Club was. And really the birth of the Society of Explorers Adventurers came from Pleasure Island. And for those that aren't aware, that Pleasure Island is now the portion that is now called, the Landing. Mm-hmm. Yes, the Landing. And that's where, what's still over there now? Raglan Road is still over there.
Boathouse?
Boathouse is over there. That whole section used to all be nightclubs. Mm-hmm. And there's only one wall that still exists from the previous theme that was basically untouched. And it's almost impossible to see. So your random Disney thing is that if you go, you're looking at homecoming, right? So you're waiting for your table at homecoming. You looked immediately to your left, and it's before Morimoto Asia. There is this brick wall with these, and it's above the gate, and back there is just like a trash compactor basically, but there is this brick wall, and that is the only wall that is still original and still themed to the Mannequins Club that used to be there in that spot.
Oh, cool. Very interesting.
Right. So the only thing that's it almost matches identical to the paint job, but that's the only thing that is still unchanged. Everything else, you can hardly even, like, it doesn't look like it anymore. Everything is completely changed, completely gutted. That is the only piece that is still reminiscent of what used to be.
Hmm.
Yes. Hmm. So now it's broken up into multiple neighborhoods. And this was because Pleasure Island did die eventually. Sadly, not so sadly, honestly. There was a lot of issues.
It was the drugs that did it. Let's be honest.
True.
That really was what it was. There was a lot of things that they did not realize. Hey, you're going to bring in nightlife. Well, you're going to get the nightlife mentality along with it.
The knife life. Was that a Freudian slip? Just like there were stabbings.
I can neither confirm nor deny. You know, nobody ever dies on Disney World property. They just get transported off of Disney World property and then they die elsewhere. So I can't confirm that. But there, yeah. So there were a lot of unnecessary things, things that just really brought down the environment. The nightclub life did change over the years. By the late 90s, that wasn't necessarily the thing to do now. All these club kids also started having kids. And they wanted to go to the newest things of Hollywood Studios and Animal Kingdom. They didn't want to go to Pleasure Island in the evening. So
I think you mean MGM at the time.
Oh, it was MGM at the time. And
plus, so everyone started, you know, after going to Pleasure Island, there was the, you know, several people turned into donkeys, got shipped off to the salt mines, you know, just a couple of things like that happened. It was like, you know, this is, we need to just cut this out.
It was rough. It was rough.
You know? Sorry, we're totally hijacking your Disney
story. That's great. And so it did change over the years, and these places sat vacant for so long. So the plan was to completely revitalize Downtown Disney, change it from what it once was, bring in a lot of third parties now, and less Disney owned and operated, how to expand the shopping aspect of it. So instead of the three areas of West Side, which was the far left of Cirque du Soleil up to the bridge of Pleasure Island, and then the marketplace basically of Downtown Disney, it is now four neighborhoods. And the parking lot of Pleasure Island became Town Center. So it is now West Side, the Landing, aka Old Pleasure Island, Town Center, and the Marketplace. And they all are themed around the very first building that was supposedly built. So Imagineering came in. They're like, hey, okay, we don't want a hodgepodge. We actually want a storyline, and we want each neighborhood to be broken up by different architecture, right?
Mm-hmm.
So can you guess what the first building in the Disney Imagineering story was in what is currently Disney Springs? Can you take a gander?
Is it the bottling building?
Close.
Ooh.
The parking garage.
It's probably that well thing they put in the middle of that square.
That is right? Part of it. That okay. is part of it.
So it's that area.
That area. Can you think of what three buildings in mm-hmm. but out of one specific building, three buildings that don't match any architecture in the surrounding area?
Is it that one DVC building thing that's next to the burger place? I'm really thinking of what that is called.
You're close. You're stepping in the right grounds.
I'm thinking what's around that, because on the right is like the building that that fancy store is in. Oh gosh. The one that's in all the shopping malls.
Zara?
Not Zara. Zara's on the left. That's not a fancy store.
Anthropology?
Anthropology, yes. Mm. lots of Zara hate on this podcast.
I mean, obviously.
So, yeah, so the one that's like directly behind the little spinny, like the spring right. itself.
So, yes, you're in the correct mindset. So the first house was the homestead of Deluxe Burger.
Oh, it's the burger place.
The burger okay, place.
Perfect.
So Deluxe Burger was the homestead house, and that's why it actually looks like a house. It doesn't match anything else. Mm-hmm. But the neighboring buildings on this ranch, because it was supposed to be the Glowing Oak Ranch, so that's why there's lanterns in the trees. It glows at night. There's pictures of what used to be the ranch inside Deluxe Burger. But all of the buildings that were part of the ranch have metal tin roofs. Hmm. So just like Deluxe Burger does, so does Blaze Pizza,
mm-hmm.
Frontera Cocina, and the Guest Relations Building.
Okay, yeah. See, and I was thinking the Guest Relations Building. That's what I was yes. thinking of. Not a DVC building.
Not a DVC building. I understood what you were saying, because there's always a DVC counter outside of the Guest Relations yes. building. Mm-hmm. So yes, you were correct. But when you go into Guest Relations, there is all of this artwork on the very top of the roof area. So before you get to the ceiling, and it is like the marshlands and what every single neighborhood was back in the day as this town was growing up around this ranch. And then, so the buildings were supposed to be like a barn style. The, if you go into Blaze Pizza, there's this giant oven, this type of like grain mill type aesthetic, and it was all connected to the springs, and those are right there along the waterway. So they were all, the ranch was fed by this, the springs idea. And then the rest of the town grew up around it. So the next thing that opened up was the marketplace later on, years later. And that is designed in 1970s arts and crafts style. I wonder why, because that's why it was built in 75. And that basically has stayed the same. So that's supposed to be where the people just outside of the ranch. So that's more of the town lives, right?
Yeah.
And then because of the ranch, because of this growing town over there, well, they had to have some mode of transportation, right? So the landing, all the restaurants there in the landing are themed after turn of the century technology and transportation.
Okay.
So Jock Lindsey's, he was the kind of the be all guy to transport goods, lived there in Florida, set up shop, good friends of Indiana Jones, all that stuff. So it was the hangar bar, right? So the, what kind of planes are there? They're the planes that can land on water.
Float planes.
Float planes? Is that what they're called?
Mm-hmm.
Float planes would land there. But then you have Marie and Enzo's, which is the Italian place on the far left side. It is themed to an airport terminal.
Yes.
And then you have the Edison bar, and the Edison is supposed to be the electric factory. And something fun about, if you, it goes down to the lampposts, guys. It is such great detail. The lampposts change as you go further away from the Edison. So the Edison has electric lights from when the street lights were introduced. And as you get further away from it, it's gas powered lights that change throughout the century.
Very interesting.
Isn't that fun? Yeah.
Can we take a time out? Ian, your mic disconnected, and now you're being picked up through your headphone mic.
Really? Will it switch, or do you have to stop the recording and switch it back to the other one?
It says I'm still on Snowball.
It something changed where it either got really loud, but it also doesn't, it sounds worse.
Really? It's so weird. Do you think I can unplug it and plug it back in?
Oh, wait. Now it's back to normal.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Is it okay in the recording or still good?
I muted myself and then unmuted myself. But I think it should be picking. It says it's...
Yeah, now it sounds fine. There was just a moment while Danielle was talking, I could just hear your breathing really, really
maybe
loud.
Maybe it switched over to his other mic.
That's what it sounded like. But because it was your lapel, it was the mic near your lapel that was picking you up.
That's interesting. Maybe it...
It's not anymore, though. No.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, so, well, sorry.
Okay, so we can continue. I just wanted to...
So, Danielle, you were on the lamppost as you move away from the Edison.
Okay. Some other great things of referencing transportation or this growing, like, neighborhood is Gideon's, right? So Gideon's Cookies, when you go inside, it's this mysterious library, this eccentric antique location. Everything in there is probably cursed, and it's because these items were collected from all the points of travel, and this was kind of the mid hub where things were exchanged and traded at. And then one of my personal favorites is actually the Ganachery, which is another Disney owned and operated location that is all themed to chocolate. But when you go into it, it has medicine vials and like tools used for like an old apothecary. So when you go in, it's like all these mixtures, all these herbs. And I mean, at the end of the day, it's all chocolate because the best thing in medicine is sweets or chocolate. So all those little apothecary details are in there because they were the apothecary of the entire town. Later on, then it would build out to be the town center. So it's a change in architecture style. Town center is basically that in-between point from World of Disney from one side all the way over to Planet Hollywood. And it's all this white, very Meisner style architecture. This is also really greatly reflected in the holiday decor. A lot of
mercury glass, a lot of white lights, lost chandeliers, because what you would find in a Meisner style home, especially in South Florida. And I love it so much, especially during the holiday season. It's one of my favorite areas to be in. And that's something else, is that all these stories are blatantly told in the holiday decor. So when you're in town center, the holiday garlands are up. As you're walking around, you will see modes of transportation hidden in the garland of what's supposed to be there. So when you're near Marie and Enzo's, when you're near Jock Lindsay's, they'll have airplanes in it. When you get closer to the very center where, what is it? Steakhouse, the 71? STK is? Not Steakhouse 71, STK. Mm-hmm. STK is designed to look like a train station or a train hub. And then if you look at the ground right there in front of it, it has a turntable for a train right there. And they'll have train elements in the garland near it. So like these great little details and these little things of like history that some of them even date back to Florida history are kind of given an homage and are kind of given a little hidden detail in Disney Springs. And then you go over to the West Side. West Side was supposed to be basically their kind of like expo or like World's Fair aesthetic. And that was supposed to be on the outskirts of town, but then it became a permanent setup. And that's why Cirque du Soleil is there, because it was the tent that was built just outside of town for where the circus was coming into town for this giant expo.
Mm-hmm.
That's fun.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's some really great details and some things I really love. Now, my question to y'all is, did you know any of this?
No.
I knew like there was something Springs related, because like there's the Bottling Co. as like the big sign, which is, I think, is that Morimoto's? Is the Bottling Co.
Morimoto Asia. Yeah, and even if you go into Morimoto Asia and you actually look at the details and you look up the chandeliers and this track system is all glass bottles. And that's where supposedly they would bottle up the spring water. And I actually have one of the bottles that they put in the decor. At one point, they actually sold them in Marketplace because they made so many of them. Most of them are only in Morimoto Asia. They don't sell them anymore, but actually says Springs Bottling Co. on it. And so I do have one of those. I did acquire one, and it's one of my favorite things from my time there.
Yeah, so I don't know. I didn't know about a lot of this, but I think it's really cool. I like knowing all the details behind it, because I feel like Disney Springs feels very, you know, very like eclectic. Like, honestly, like, don't take this the wrong way, Danielle. I know Disney Springs is your baby, but Disney Springs is, I'm going to go on record as saying, Disney Springs is the most universal feeling thing on Disney property, because it doesn't feel like there's a cohesive theme if you don't know this backstory. You know, it feels like there's little pockets of theming all around, but nothing really like unifying it all together. So I think this helps explain like, okay, this is why there's such drastically different architecture and obviously different time periods kind of working together. It's like, well, it's the development of this town kind of around the springs. Obviously, there's a very wealthy boat collector in this town that happens to collect some very nice boats. You know, it's like, I mean, there's some things obviously where it's just, you know, like I said, more of the pockets of theming. But I feel like this helps definitely like kind of connect the dots of, okay, it's not totally random that all of this is here. It's actually, you know, intentional, kind of the placement, the architecture, the design and stuff like that.
And this is, talking on these stories is actually how I kind of got started in my Disney career and, or my social media career, honestly, because I came back from Walt Disney World, came back to Walt Disney World property post COVID, and I was filming these stories in my car, and these would suddenly get a little bit of traction. And I realized I need to go back and revisit these stories online, because I'm like, oh, I've already talked about it. Yeah, but that's been 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And my following does not remember those stories, and or I have so many new followers, I need to revisit this again.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's great. I wish Disney would be more like open about the storytelling of Disney Springs, or like, you know, have some official like videos about it or something. Because I feel like it's just not, I don't know, walking into Disney Springs, you wouldn't really know unless you knew, you know?
See, and I feel like I only have a passion for it because I taught it. I facilitated the class to the third party operating participants back in the day. And so, yeah, I feel like, and that we've been seeing this also with some other things that have opened up here recently, like
test track, right? Mm-hmm. There are some great homages and hidden details, but the Imagineers haven't been straightforward with it. And yeah. so you have to find that information. Some of it's because I feel like Disney doesn't give the okay for them to say and for them to explain their reasoning for a lot of things. And I think that's really, at the end of the day, it kind of kills the creativity because these artists can't talk about their art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then people like me have to come in and be like, you guys don't understand art, direction, storytelling, you know, yeah. like, so mm-hmm. things I'm very passionate about. And I wish these artists could talk about what their passion, what they love that they put into these things.
Yeah. And sorry, you know,
that was cut
you off. I think when you get corporate entities involved and like other companies and third parties, you're far more limited in how you can like really express this creative storytelling. Mm-hmm. I think the Pleasure Island was more forward with its storytelling because the majority of it was Disney run. And like, you can, if you own and operate everything there, you can easily control the storytelling and make sure it's presented how you want it to be. But when like you're creating the storytelling with third parties in mind and they have to then like be in on it mm-hmm. and join that storytelling, it's like, okay, you're adding an extra layer where now you're expecting the third party to extend the storytelling in the same way that Disney would. And I really don't know that you can expect that most of the time. Yeah.
And that's exactly why so many of the third parties are all located in Town Center, the most mm-hmm. generic looking area. So that way it still reflects the brand. The brand can still put their signage up. They can't necessarily change the outside of the facade, but they can change the inside. And that's why they all look the same. So that way the retailers can switch out. You can have new partners come in, old partners exit, and it doesn't change the theming of Town Center. It's a little harder to do in the Landing because most, mm-hmm. but if you think about it, most of the people that are there in the Landing, like Boathouse and stuff, have been there since the beginning because their theming and their storytelling was created specifically for that restaurant, and they are still continuous partners because of it.
Has Boathouse been there that long?
Yeah.
Really? I don't remember it being there until it became Disney Springs.
Boathouse was one of the last partners added, but they were still there in the very beginning. So like nobody else has been there in that, in like that housing in that building except for Boathouse.
Gotcha. Cause I know like Raglan Road has been there like forever. Yeah. As long as I can remember, at least we started going as kids. I do think there are like, when you have a smaller company, like I think of Gideon's, which I really am not impressed by Gideon's. I don't mm-hmm. think the inside of the store is that interesting. But I do think that because they're a smaller company, they're able to really like go all in on the storytelling a bit yes. better than some of the bigger corporations. Like you're never going to get that level of storytelling out of Zara, you know, or like
Under Armour.
Yeah,
Lululemon.
Exactly.
We're not pulling out a theme story for the store of Lululemon. It's like, sorry, yeah. you just get a Lululemon retail store. Sorry.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I agree. And some of the locations that actually did have great brand ideas and like had an identity in their own brand and had a great theming, they translated that into their door handles. A great example of this is what used to be the Levi's store. Mm-hmm. The Levi's store, the handles were Levi's jean buttons. Okay. And like, that was great. That was really cool. One of the few that still exist is over at Columbia. They're fish hooks.
Mm-hmm.
And what's another one that still exists?
It doesn't exist anymore, but I remember the Volcom store had the Volcom like diamond
that had the Vulcan diamond handle. Yes.
Yeah.
So I think there's some that they had great brand identity, and the way that they were able to translate it to the outside of their building was through their door handles. And the ones that don't have that great brand identity and they're just corporate ideal, they're just a normal door handle. And it was little things like that that I was like, oh, I could tell. And some of the brands that still are around have that detailing and that consistency because they know their brand and they know their identity and their little niches, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What is one Pleasure Island or classic downtown Disney spot, location, attraction, restaurant that you would want to bring back to Disney Springs?
Ooh.
Something that's gone, but not forgotten.
Gone, but not forgotten.
I don't think I ever went to Pleasure Island or... I don't know if I have been to Disney. Like, I think the only... I've only been to Disney Springs. I don't think I ever went to Pleasure Island, and I don't think I ever went to downtown Disney that I can really remember, like, as a kid. So this is a tough question for me.
I think for me, I do kind of miss, not necessarily an area, but an aspect or like a design detail. And some of that was in the downtown Disney days and Michael Eisner era of the oversized figurines that were like in World of Disney. You had the genie outside of Once Upon a Toy. You had these larger than life figures. I kind of miss that aspect. I understand why it changed. And like they definitely were very late 90s, early 2000s coded. And they probably would not have the same grandeur that they did back then.
I don't know. I still see kids playing out front of that Stitch at World of Disney.
Oh yeah, that's true.
They still love that. I do know why they had to get rid of Genie with his camera at pointed at the splash pad.
That was awkward. Kind of problematic. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're missing the Highway 192 vibe, kind of the giant wizard shop in
the sideshow attraction. Yeah.
Do you wonder if maybe, actually, I need to do that research, because a lot of those 192 stores did pop up in the very early 90s, around the same time that these larger than life figures were. Were they really just mimicking the Eisner era statues, or was it vice versa?
I think, I feel like some of those roadside oddities are probably even a little earlier, closer to like late 70s.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe early 80s. But you didn't, you gave a half answer, Danielle. I'm going to lock you down on an actual restaurant, a store, something that is gone. I want to know what we got to bring back. What third party or even like Disney store attraction should we bring back to Disney Springs?
I don't know.
Heard about the, what was the one with the Society of Explorers and Adventurers, where that was like referenced. That sounded
Club.
Very fun to me. The Adventurers Club, very thematic, very like kind of like Trader Sam's, you know, grotto type.
Honestly,
vibe.
Yes.
You know, where
yes.
I was like, man, every time you've talked about that, I'm like, I would go to that nowadays just to experience it, get the adventurer vibe. Like, that sounds very fun to me.
Adventurers Club walked, so Beacon Barrel, Oga's Canteen, and Trader Sam's could run is really what it is. Like, that's really what started the idea of themed entertainment bar locations. So if I had to give an answer, it would be that. However, I didn't pick that one first only because I never got to experience it because I was too young. So, but I've seen pictures, I've seen YouTube videos, I know the lore, and I wish I could have experienced it back in the day.
Yeah, I think as an adult, I would pick that one as well.
Yes.
Because I want to experience that. And like you said, as kids, we didn't get to experience it. If I pick something that was like, as kids, we got to experience.
Yeah.
I have very fond memories of the Virgin Records store.
Because we would just wander around and pick up the headphones and listen to the music.
Yes.
Like, and that was a great AC trip in the middle of the day.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that's where I bought my first CD.
Really?
Which was Switchfoot's The Beautiful Letdown.
You're
right. I'm pretty
right.
sure that came from that store. And I'm pretty sure your Jump 5 CD came from the Virgin Records store in downtown Disney.
Probably, because we probably came down for Night of Joy and they were performing there.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you money that is correct.
So I have that memory of like buying my first CD from downtown Disney at the Virgin Records store as a kid. And then I also have like, I still have like an Alien Workshop board up hanging upstairs that's from the Curl store before it turned into Disney Springs. Rest in power, Curl.
Wow.
gone, not missed. It wasn't a good well, store.
Pearl was there before Ron John, and then Ron John yes. came in. Curl was there in the when Disney Springs was revitalized. They had a store custom made for them. And then they're gone.
Yeah, they're gone. They're dead.
They were they taken over by M&M?
M&M took over that store?
I believe
there's an
so.
M&M store?
Yeah, it's huge.
How have I not seen that?
Because we don't go over that side because of the dead ESPN zone.
It was no Curl wasn't that far. Oh, Curl did move all the way down there. Moved I'm thinking of the Curl the when down. It was in the middle.
It was there in near Pleasure where Island.
Jock Lindsay is now. Yeah.
It took over one of the club locations, and then they tried to keep their contract, and they got pushed all the way down to the far side, didn't have the same traction, so they brought in the M&M store.
Okay. I've never yes, you're right. I never think of that because now that Disney Quest is gone, I have no reason to walk down there.
Right. Well, and something that should have showed up at D23. What are we doing with this dead space besides it being cast member break room? Anyway.
Wow. Yeah. You know, I think the older I get and the more I learn about like 80s, 90s Disney, Michael Eisner gets a lot of flack, but I am a Michael Eisner apologist. I
think so.
Really like Michael Eisner. And I like a lot of his decisions. And
because
I do think
at
he
the
saved
time,
Disney.
Well, it, well, yeah, I think there was a lot of destroying points. There was a lot of building points. And I think for our generation of the younger side of the millennials, that and like end of the Gen Zers, a lot of the stuff that came out because of the Eisner era is what we had emotional sentimental attachment to because they were larger than life and they were really out there, but that's what our memories grabbed onto. So I do mm-hmm. think that's interesting. Yes.
Dare I say, I think he spearheaded a better guest experience than Bob Iger ever has.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
That I feel like is a debate for another episode.
Yeah.
So.
I feel like Michael Eisner, the benefit of Michael Eisner is he was not afraid to write checks for in-person experiences, which is yes. something that is a lost art because I think now it's all about, you know, it's all about the money. It's about where we can make money digitally.
Who's paying for it?
You know, let's focus on the Disney Plus app. Everyone's kind of like, yeah, the parks, they make some money, but we don't need that. Whereas Michael Eisner was like, this is like, it may make no money at all, but this is the face of Disney. Like it should be just insane, you know? And so that was definitely a plus, I think, of the Eisner era. You got some of that, like those blank checks to just do things that nowadays it's like, wait, we're going to spend how much money on this and how many people are going there? How much is like our average park attendance and like the cost of the park tickets? Oh, it's only like an eighth of the budget for this production. Like maybe we shouldn't do that, you know? So I do think there is something, I think that is probably why we like it and connected with it is because there's some of that experience that we had. But I also think it's very in line with Walt's original vision for Disney, where it's about an experience, it's about a connection, and I'm fine spending a lot of money to make that connection, even if it doesn't like make sense in an accounting Excel sheet. So I do think sometimes there is that longing in my own heart, Clarence, I understand that, of bring back some of that, let's just do it. Like it doesn't make sense. But Disney is the forefront of entertainment. We should do things like this that are the forefront of entertainment, you know, regardless of whether that makes sense from a shareholder's perspective. You know, it's like, let's just go ahead and do it. So I don't know. I do kind of want some of that back, but I don't think, you know, with just the current executive team, you're not going to get some of that for a long time.
No.
But yeah, there were great things about Eisner. There were bad things about Eisner. We know there are both, but I understand what you're saying, Clarence. So there was some pros to that. I don't know if I'm going to go quite as far as like Michael Eisner is right. The guy, the best CEO of Disney of all time, like best guest experience, whatever. I think there's a lot going on behind the scenes, I feel like, with him.
A
but
lot.
But I agree with this sentiment of he did, I think, in a lot of ways, bring some good things to Disney. So.
Well,
Well, y'all, I want to know your opinions. If you have not already, we do have some segments that we are starting up here now that the show is officially live, and we are slowly posting out our episodes. Make sure you are sending us your reviews, your rating, reviewing the show. Let us know your opinions. You can send over a DM also to podcast@thedapperdanielle.com. Let us know there.
Is that what we're calling emails now? DMs?
Yeah. DMs, whatever. We also have the official show socials are now live too, and they are the Dapper Danielle Show. And you can send a message over there too, and I will be trying to make sure that those messages come in properly. And so also make sure you go check out the Patreon. That is now live too. And we have some polls and posts up there as well. And anything else to add, guys?
Send in cast member stories so we can read those and share the dirty laundry on the podcast.
Or the clean laundry that is very clean beautiful.
Clean laundry that is filtered through.
Yes, yeah. we want good stories. We want great, and we want your
out there
customer service
experience.
Nightmares. We want to hear both. So magical moments to
the most unmagical
terrific
moment.
Terrors.
Yeah.
I like that. Terrific terrors and magical
I was
moments.
Trying to think of something with some alliteration, magical moments,
right?
So send those over to podcast@thedapperdanielle.com. Danielle said, leave a comment, leave us a rating, Spotify, iTunes, YouTube, wherever you listen to this. Do we have there's a book signing coming up.
I believe it'll be over by the time this episode is out, though.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, so
We will let you know when there is another signing happening here. We're trying to organize another one here in Orlando sometime. But something we can also officially talk about now is that the Epcot book, I Love Epcot, is officially available for pre-order wherever you get your books at, either Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Amazon, basically anywhere. I think you can even get through Target and Walmart's website. So you can go ahead and secure that. And more information to come. We'll probably do a book signing of that too, but that will not be releasing until January 6th. But what you could do is that as we're looking at holiday season, you go ahead and pre-order it, right? And you take a picture of the pre-order, the cover, you cut it out and you put it in a box or an envelope, and then you can gift it to somebody. I've done that for you a couple times, Clarence, because Amazing. It was delayed in shipping. And we're like, this is what's coming eventually, but Merry Christmas. So that is an option as well. But again, thank you all so much for listening this far into the episode. We genuinely appreciate it. We'll be back next week for another great topic. And until next time, night night, sleep tight, dream of churros tonight.